Why does Congress allow interest and gains in permanent life insurance policies to accrue tax-free? I'll explain next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio with New York Times best-selling author and your host, Doug Andrew.
This is Doug Andrew speaking to you, our incredible national audience, from our three-dimensional wealth studios nestled in the base of the majestic Rocky Mountains. This show is about empowering you, people, and organizations that want to optimize their assets, minimize taxes, and empower their authentic wealth. Well, folks, by the end of this segment, today's show, you will understand why for more than 108 years in the Internal Revenue Code, money inside of a permanent life insurance policy accumulates tax-free, and you can access that money income tax-free, and when you die, it transfers income tax-free. So why does Congress allow this? This question has been asked me thousands of times during the 48-plus years that I've taught audiences all over America on how to optimize their assets and minimize taxes. If you've listened to me much on this station and this show, I have been a financial strategist and retirement planning specialist helping people optimize their assets. Now, a lot of people go, well, what do you mean by that? And minimize taxes. Well, first of all, in today's show, I want to cover different ways that I've been able to help people do that. I'm going to tell you some real life stories. But in this first segment, I need to sort of set the stage by helping you understand why my favorite vehicle, financial instrument, where I would recommend that Americans, especially at retirement, because at retirement planning is something totally different than maybe what you did for your retirement planning. Most Americans, I think, are duped into putting most of their retirement savings into tax-deferred IRAs and 401ks, usually invested in the market. And at retirement, you know, they're not in a lower tax bracket if they save very much. So they realize maybe that wasn't the smartest thing to do. They're going to have to pay a bunch of tax on the back end. And then they wonder what they should do. And they're, again, duped, I think, into taking RMDs, continuing to defer, postpone, procrastinate paying tax to some future perceived unknown advantage, and then told to take out required minimum distributions, thinking you're saving tax. And I can show you mathematically that's not saving you tax in the long run. The big picture, you're actually compounding the tax. And people say, well, why do shows, financial advisors tell you to do that? Or why does CNBC or with their financial gurus tell you to do that? And I go, well, who's funding those programs? Government revenuers, okay? Let's not even go there right now. But when people realize, golly, the stock market does not allow you to create predictable income streams. See, Wall Street was never designed or built for you to sell your stocks or your mutual fund shares. So that's why when people would come to me at retirement and they had 60, 70, 80, 90% or more of their money and yet to be taxed IRAs or 401ks invested in the market, I would go, what are you thinking? So we would have to begin a strategy called a strategic rollout. This is not a rollover. This is a rollout, and I'll talk about that strategy in the next few segments. But where do we roll it out to? Well, my favorite bucket is the tax-free bucket, is what I call it. It's the most misunderstood and underutilized bucket. And there are only a few financial instruments, places where you can put money, that allow you to accumulate your money tax-free and then be able to take it out and not have to pay tax on any money you made. But there's only one instrument that when you finally pass away, whatever you leave behind sort of blossoms. It increases in value and transfers income tax-free. And that's a max-funded insurance contract. And that's where you're taking the least amount of life insurance the IRS will let you get away with. in the Internal Revenue Code and you're putting in the most money that the IRS allows because you want to use that life insurance contract or policy for living benefits. And this is where I have been able to earn average rates of return, averaging, 8%, 9.6%, 10.07%. And so there are many times by using indexed universal life, my favorite vehicle, and rebalancing, that people have been able to earn an average of 11% and net 10% because only 1% of their earnings was the cost of the insurance that the IRS had to be there in order for it to be tax-free. And people begin to realize, wow, yeah, I'd rather earn 11 and net 10 than have to earn 15 or 16% in a tax-deferred IRA or 401k in order to net 10 after paying tax in a 33% tax bracket between federal and state income tax, okay? And this is the wake-up call that a lot of people get, and it's often too late, so I have to sort of get them out of the tax trap with their IRAs and 401ks. So let's go back to what I wanted to address in this segment. Why does the government allow you to accumulate money inside of a permanent life insurance policy tax-free? A lot of times people say, well, as soon as the IRS figures this out, they're going to close that loophole. Folks, it's not a loophole. And so throughout the years, many times you'll get government revenuers, those who are advocates of bigger and bigger government and let's continue to tax, tax, tax. And there have been many times where they have said, hey, let's pluck this little plum over here, this tax-free protection that money inside of life insurance policies get. Well, every time that they've studied this, and the last time they did a real big report with the General Accountability Office and the Senate and Finance Committee, the House Ways and Means Committee and so forth, was back in 1990, and they've done it several times before and since, but this was a big, thick report, okay? And they said, golly, how much money could we get as a government if we could just tax the cash value inside of permanent life insurance? Well, they came up with a number, but then they were smart enough back then to realize, wait a minute, if we did this, it would cost the government far more than it would make them in tax revenue. Why? Because the short-term benefits did not outweigh the long-term costs of additional welfare dependency. The reason why the government allows tax-free accumulation under Section 72E of the Internal Revenue Code inside of life insurance policies and then tax-free access under Section 7702 is because people are trying to be responsible and accountable, take pressure off of the government to provide for themselves in retirement so that the money can accumulate tax-free and they can take it out tax-free. They're taking pressure off of the government having to provide additional welfare benefits or bigger Social Security benefits or whatever it is. And so for decades, it's been a sacred tax-free, like cash cow in the Internal Revenue Code, because it's saving the government money, not costing them tax revenue, because if they taxed it, they would be shooting themselves in the foot. And what if you die sooner than later? It's tax-free when you die under Section 101A of the Internal Revenue Code because you're leaving behind money that will help those you leave behind, often widows or orphans, that will not have to rely on the government for welfare or assistance because you are being responsible and accountable by insuring yourself so that whether you lived a long time or died sooner than later, the money accumulates tax-free and provides tax-free income because you're not going to be dependent on the government if you live a long time. But if you die sooner than later and you leave behind heirs that you would have provided for had you stayed around, they will not be dependent on the government because you're leaving behind hopefully several hundred thousand dollars of tax-free money that will help them not have to be dependent on government. So the General Accountability Office, when they studied this, they realize, golly, this would cost us more than it would make us in the long run. Leave it alone. People are trying to be responsible and accountable. Plus, a lot of Congress members own permanent life insurance policies, and they didn't want to hurt this. But they basically said, if we ever did tax this inside buildup, this cash value inside of life insurance policies, we would make sure to grandfather everybody who owned them, who established them under previous tax law. That's sort of under the ex post facto provision of the Constitution that basically says government is not supposed to pass new tax law that adversely affects something that you established under previous tax law. I can't guarantee the government will always honor that, but that's what it means by grandfathering. That's why I think you ought to consider grandfathering yourself for a max-funded insurance contract sooner than later.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
What are some real life stories of transforming people's financial situation by optimizing assets and minimizing taxes? I'll explain and tell you some next. Welcome back. This is Doug Andrew, Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. If you're just joining us, in the last segment, I was talking about my favorite financial instrument that for decades now, it allows people to optimize their assets and minimize taxes by accumulating their money tax-free, and then they can generate tax-free income. And when they ultimately die, anything they leave behind blossoms and transfers income tax-free. There's nothing else in the Internal Revenue Code that I'm aware that does that. And I've taught advanced continuing education to many CPAs and tax attorneys, and I've challenged them to show me something else that does that. And so in the previous segment, I was talking about max-funded insurance contracts, and I prefer indexed universal life. This is where I've been able to earn returns of 11 netting 10. Some years, like last year, many people who owned indexed universal life from the advisors that I point my students to locked in gains of 25%, 61.33%, even 158% on their indexed universal life. And there's naysayers out there that say, oh, I've never seen one do that. And I go, oh, brother. Well, we have hundreds and even thousands of clients who have been experiencing rates of return averaging between 7 to 10% tax-free. And I'm talking about even net after the cost of the insurance that the IRS has to be there in order for it to be tax-free. Meaning that if you had a $1 million nest egg, it can generate $70,000, $80,000, even $100,000 a year of tax-free income if you live to be 120, okay? Now, what I promised to share in the next few segments are some actual stories. So I'm going to start in this segment with a very simple story, and then stay with me if you have time to the next couple of segments, and I'm going to get a little bit more advanced because those of you who have money that I think is trapped in IRAs and 401ks, and you think you're saving tax by continuing to postpone until you're age 72, and then some advisor told you, well, if you don't need the money, just take out RMDs. I'm going to explain why I think that's the worst advice for many of you out there. I'm also going to give an example of some of you who have real estate. Many people in the greater San Francisco Bay Area own rental income real estate, and many times they think that that's their retirement. And I'm going to give you a story on why you ought to come and learn what you can do better. Okay? So in this segment, here's a simple story. Several years ago, I was doing my educational seminars, which we love to do, helping people understand how many times they get into these tax traps following the herd, putting money in tax-deferred IRAs or 401ks, usually invested in the market, and then they hit retirement. And lo and behold, they're not in a lower tax bracket. You're not going to be in a lower bracket if you save very much. And then they realize, golly, now what am I going to do? And they often get duped into deferring until their age 70 and a half. It used to be the age that you had to start taking RMDs. Then they extended it a year and a half to age 72, okay? And people just think, oh, yeah, let's keep deferring, thinking they're saving tax. So I developed software years ago that would actually show people the fallacy in that reasoning, that if they continue to defer until age 72 now and then took out RMDs between them and maybe their spouse, taking out RMDs required minimum distributions, and then leaving behind the money to their heirs. Their heirs used to be able to defer until they were retired, but now if you leave behind IRA or 401k money to your heirs, they have to get it out and taxed within 10 years. Most CPAs and tax attorneys who are savvy will now admit leaving money behind in an IRA or 401k is probably the worst place to leave money, okay? Well, let me give you a simple story. I had a very smart gentleman who was worth about $5 million. This was a few years back. He came to one of these seminars and he realized that he had been given wrong advice by his accountant and his financial advisor. He had $500,000 in his yet-to-be-taxed IRAs, and he was just turning 70 and a half. Back then, that's when he had to start withdrawing at least the minimum RMD or what? He would have to be penalized 50% on top of the tax. And so what did his advisor tell him? We'll just take out RMDs. Well, he came to my seminar and he had this awakening and he was sharp, smart, and he realized, no, this is not the thing to do. And so what I was basically teaching in that seminar is how you can do a strategic rollout and you can get the money out over maybe 5 years and get the taxes over and done with sooner than later, and then put the net after tax money into something that's going to be tax free from now on, a max funded indexed universal life insurance policy that will then generate tax free income that will last as long as you do. And at the end of the day, when you die, it blossoms and it reimburses most people far more than the tax they paid during the rollout process. So he comes to me at the first appointment and he goes, Doug, okay, I get it. Thank you so much for helping me understand this. He says, I've got a $500,000 in my IRAs. I'm in the highest tax bracket. He was between federal and state in a 40% tax bracket. He said, I will never be in a lower bracket. In fact, I think taxes are going to be higher in the future. I said, I do too. He said, so what good does it do me to roll it out over 5 years? And I said, well, we have to comply with the tax citation so that when we put it into a max funded indexed universal life policy, it will be tax free when you take out the income. He says, you know what, Doug, this money in this IRA, I do not need. He was very blessed. He had, you know, $5 million of other assets with real estate or whatever. He said, I get it. He said, so I've already made the decision based upon what you taught. I'm going to pull out this $500,000 in one fell swoop because I don't think taxes are going to be lower in the future. And I'm going to pay 40%, $200,000 in tax because I don't think it's going to be any less than that. And I have a net of $300,000. He said, what can you do for me with $300,000 in one of those indexed universal life policies? And I do not intend to access money. And I go, oh. So would you like me to sort of flip the scenario where you want to maximize what you leave behind? He said, absolutely. And I went, oh, okay. So for $300,000, normally I could have gotten away with maybe $500,000 of death benefit to generate, $30,000 a year of tax-free income. He said, no, I don't care about that. I want to maximize what I leave behind. So I sort of minimum funded it in one fell swoop, and I ended up with a $1,500,000 death benefit on an indexed universal life based on his life expectancy. He says, I want you to calculate that based on if I live 12 years. He said, if I live longer, I have the money to keep putting money in. But I would rather leave behind $1.5 million tax-free whenever I die than $500,000 in an IRA or 401k that would, if it doubled twice by the time I died, after tax, it would not equal that. He got it, okay? You want to hear what happened? We insured him for $1.5 million. He funded it with a one-time payment of $300,000. It became a modified endowment contract. He didn't care. The money accumulates tax deferred, and when he died, it left behind $1.5 million. Unfortunately, he passed away about 7 years later, but his children got $1.5 million tax-free instead of $500,000 in IRAs or 401ks that if they were lucky, they would have netted $300,000. What would you rather leave behind, $300,000 after tax or $1.5 million to your heirs?
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.